Yud Zayin Ma'al Cheshvan, Monday the 10th of November, Rabbi David Koenig, Gevulas Shmita.
We'll continue the previous shiur. We just had a shiur by Shmita, so I'll continue it a bit. And I want to start off that it's very impressive that in Chutz La'aretz people are following up on Inyanei Shmita, because us, who are originally from Chutz La'aretz, have an inherent problem. We don't have a girsa de yankasa with the concept that fruits or vegetables could be a problem. That's our problem. If you grow up in Eretz Yisrael, you get this sort of with your mother's milk, that fruits and vegetables also can have need to be dealt with before the mutar b'achila. In fact, I always start when I speak about Shemitah with a very interesting story from the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish lived in Eretz Yisrael. In Shemitah, Tovshin Yud Beis, that's 1952, there wasn't yet a setup to supply produce for the Shomrei Shemitah. For whatever reason, the government then had an austerity program. All the produce had to be sold to them, and they would give it out for the stores. So the Fruma Oilim had a problem that they really didn't have any fresh fruits and vegetables the whole year. So the Pardes Chana Rav, his mother was an elderly woman, she was ill. So he sent his son into the Chazon Ish to ask him, what do we do in her situation? The doctor wants her to eat fresh vegetables, fruits, and there aren't any. Chazon Ish listens to the story, and he says, it's mutter. She can buy sfichin. She can buy regular Yerokis min Ashuk. He allowed her. Okay. The Bocher starts to walk out, and he hears how the Chazon Ish says, half to himself, half in order to be overheard. We see what it is, how a mitzvah has mazel. Some mitzvahs have mazel. Turns around and says, what do you mean? He says, look, Sfichim is an Isidir Rabbanan. We just heard. Basar Oif B'cholov, chicken mixed with butter, is also only an Isidir Rabbanan. So he gets scared. So he says, what do you mean? So maybe we shouldn't be matir. He says, no. She's very ill. I heard the situation. I was matir for her to eat sfichim because in her situation I would allow her to eat basar oif b'cholov. But that you would never come to ask. And that's the point that we're making here. That in our girsa de yankasa, sfichim basar, what's the comparison? But really, it's the exact same as the rabban. Fine. So that's the other chasaron, of course, when we're dealing with Shemitah, is that most of us don't have a background in agriculture. We're more city dwellers. So, you know, we have to chop the difference between a fruit, a vegetable. Okay. In order to illustrate a problem that comes up here in England, because we're a small world, the global village, and produce is moving back and forth, I was informed that there's a hashgacha that gives the rabbinical organization, gives hashgachas on prepared sandwiches. Okay. One of the ingredients in the prepared sandwiches is leafy vegetables, in this case, lettuce. So the hashgacha wrote that we give a hashgacha on the entire sandwich, except for the lettuce, right. And this is a recent thing. So without having spoken to the hashgacha, I would just like to suggest what I think their issues are, and that will touch about what we're going to be talking about today. A little history. Vegetables, there are several types. Sometimes you're eating the root, like carrots, potatoes. Sometimes you're eating the fruit, like tomatoes. Sometimes you're eating the leaf, like lettuce, leafy greens. Historically, being that lettuce and many leafy greens have a problem with infestation, so the poiskim are full of, you have to check it, and how do you check it, and what's the percentages, and a whole discussion. People today are very, very frum. They, of course, don't want to eat lettuce, but Meidach Issa, they also don't want to check the lettuce, because they're also very, very busy. So these two things were a problem. It was a contradiction, one against the other. Around 25 years ago, a frum entrepreneur realized that I can marry the two, I can make it work out. I can grow lettuce already without the bugs. And that's the concept of the greenhouse lettuce, which is a major, major industry. Okay? called in Hebrew chamamot. The chamama is a greenhouse. Fine. So he did that. And I remember then when it started to hit very big in Israel, I was almost just moved, it was like 25 years. I remember somebody said, yeah, but what's going to happen now, Shemitah? What did he mean? Normally in Eretz Yisrael, where do you eat produce Shemitah from? Either from Shishis, Chutzlars, or you buy from Arab-owned land in Eretz Yisrael that they grew it. And there's no Isis Fichan on what grows by the Arabs, as we heard, correct? But that's all where you can buy it at the harvest. But if you're creating greenhouses to grow them from scratch, it's not Shmura Mishas Ktira, it's Shmura Mishas Zriya. From scratch already, the Jew and the rabbi, the rav, is involved in scratch to make sure that it's a sealed greenhouse. They have a whole protocol, and it works. So those greenhouses, which are a major capital expense, are always in a Jewish moshav, a Jewish kibbutz, or whatever, and that's where they grow it. So now it's going to come Shemitah, you're going to have here a problem. Okay. So, telescoping up to today, actually to last Shemitah, different Eitzes were thought of. One fellow tried, yes, to contract with an Arab to give him the whole wherewithal, how to build the greenhouse. Somebody came up with the following suggestion. Chutz Laretz is no problem. Can we figure out today if the Gvulais of Medinas Yisrael, do they dovetail exactly with the Gvulais of Eretz Yisrael? Maybe there's a place today that's in, again, to import from out of the country, that's very complicated. There is one company, this Shvius, that actually in Jordan set up these hothouses. And they're bringing them in from Jordan, so that's for sure okay. But then that becomes, you know, from a practical standpoint, economically he has to pay import tax. It becomes very complicated. He has to send the mashgichim over the border. It's a big ASIC. The simplest way would be, can we find something in Eretz Yisrael, out of Eretz Yisrael, that's in Medinas Yisrael? Okay. And that's what we're going to be talking about, and that's this handout that you have in front of you. Let's first go, what is the din? The Mishnah says, everybody has one? The Mishnah says, in Shviz Perek Vav Mishnah Aleph, Shalosh Arotzois L'Shviz. There are three lands, B'negeya to Hilchos Shviz. I'm not going to read the whole Mishnah, we'll go and we'll be Makasser. The Mishnah says like this. After Yetzias Mitzrayim, we came to Eretz Yisrael. We were Kovish Eretz Yisrael. That's called Kibush Oile Mitzrayim. And there was Golus Bayis Rishon. We came back a second time from Bavel. And that's Kibush Oile Bavel. Correct? Kibush Oile Bavel was a smaller area than Kibush Oile Mitzrayim. Good? The Mishnah tells us the following. Any land that wasn't in Oile Bavel, nor in Oile Mitzrayim, Nechal v'nevad. You can work the fields, and you can eat the produce that grows. There's no Issus Fichim. Good? The other way around. Any land which was both in Oile Mitzrayim and even in Oile Bavel, let's call it Eretz Yisrael proper, is Loi Nechal v'Loi Ne'evad. What does that mean? That means you're not allowed to work the ground. He who works it is Oiver and Isser. And what grows, even by itself, is not allowed to be eaten. That's the Gzeirah Svichin that we just heard before. Correct? You can't eat what grows. There's, however, a middle ground. The middle ground is an area which was part of the first conquering, Kibush Oile Mitzrayim, but not in the second conquering. That's Nechal. Chazal weren't Goyzer Sfichim, but you're not allowed to work the ground. Loi Ne'evat. Okay, so those are the three levels. The center of Eretz Yisrael, which is the areas that were conquered in Oile Bavel, Eretz Yisrael has all the Dinim of Shvius. That middle ground doesn't have Gzeir Sfichim. Something that grew, you could eat, but you're not allowed to work the ground, you're not allowed to plant. And then this Chutz Laretz. Practically, we know that not all Yidden keep all of the halachas of Shvius. Some do, are nichshel, and do plant their fields for whatever reason. So no hashgacha listen carefully, will take from that produce, even if they will decide that that area is only Oile Mitzrayim. Even though the Mishnah says that Oile Mitzrayim, you're allowed to eat it. But being that you're not allowed to plant it, no hashka, how could we go and contract with a fellow who's doing Shalai Kedim? Correct? So practically, if you are a hashgacha or you're a supplier of fruits and vegetables and you want to have hashgacha, you're going to have to try to find an area in Medina Yisrael that's not part of Eretz Yisrael in the larger sense. Not part of Oile Mitzrayim. That clear? Because practically speaking, no. If you would buy by mistake a tomato and you would know that it grew in that in-between area, you would be allowed to eat it. Because they weren't Geyser Sfichen. But the person who planted it was Eber Nisr, and therefore no Ashgacha will contract with it. That's simple. Okay. So let's try to figure out where the Gvulos of Eretz Yisrael are. Practically speaking, it's fascinating. There are four sources that we have today where Chazal gave us Oile Bavel, sort of a map, from here to here, from here to here, a list of 20 or 30 places, which we're going to have a difficulty figuring out exactly where they are. But the four sources, three of them are what we call traditional rabbinic sources, Makairis in Chazal, and the fourth one I'll say in a minute. And they all came out exactly the same. Some of the spelling issues, some areas had two names. Four Makairis are, there's a Sifri, there's a Yerushalmi, there's a Tesefta, and the fourth Makar is, you see outside the shul and the bulletin board, they put announcements, be careful, Safik Chadash, be careful, Shemitah is already an issue here in the UK, the Rabbanim put up. So they found such an announcement in a floor mosaic in an old shul from 2,000 years ago in Kibbutz Ein HaNetziv. They were digging some archaeological digs, and they find, oh, they put on the wall, it's actually on the floor, a floor mosaic, listing a whole bunch of halachas, when they get to Trumas and Aishas, when they get to Shemitah. And one of the things we get to Shemitah is you should know that the border runs from here to here to here to here, and it's pretty much the same marker. Okay. Practically speaking, as far as the northern border is concerned, everything that's in the contemporary gvulos of Medina Yisrael is part of Eretz Yisrael. You're not going to be able to make on anything up in the northern border. There's one Rav who considers it maybe a Suffolk benegia to wine, maybe, but as a general rule, the entire Golan Heights, if you're familiar with geography of Eretz Yisrael, that practically we can't get. What's with the southern Gvul of Eretz Yisrael? And that's the printout that we have here. The southern Gvul of Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk in Parashas Maaseh tells us the southeastern corner is Ketzei Yam HaMelech, Mizracha, that's sort of halfway down towards the right, if you see where Yam HaMelech is, towards the top in the middle. Down. And then the southwestern border is Nachal Mitzrayim. That's what the Pasuk says. There's a machloikis in the Rishayim where Nachal Mitzrayim is. This fellow over here, who printed this, took the approach that it's pretty much north. It was called Vadi Al-Arish. And there's another opinion that it came out all the way down to the Nile. The Gvul of Medina Yisrael, I should have really written it in for you, is a line. You see where it says on the left, Rafiach, and this is the last time I'm gonna go into the map, if it was just me talking about it. Where it says Rafiach, on the left, a third of the way down, on the ocean. From there, draw a line all the way down to the bottom, where you see the water again. A straight line, that's the border of Medina Yisrael. Till the bottom. Clear? Left side. Down to Eilat, where it says Eilat. That line is the border of Medina Yisrael. It is, it's there. It says Eilat. The Red Sea is good. So the question is, as you're driving, I'm going to say, and then afterwards you won't have to look at the map anymore. As the heart of the question is going to be the following. This is the halacha with the practical in it. When you're driving down the highway from Yam HaMelech, to Eilat, at what point do you leave the halachic Eretz Yisrael? Simple question. Look at that, and then you don't have to look at the map again for the rest of this year. You see Yam HaMelech? You start driving south. See the map, the little blue thing over there? Drive south. Till Eilat. Till the next blue, the next water. At what point are you leaving Eretz Yisrael? During the entire point, you're within the boundaries of the Eretz Yisrael. But you, at what point, at one point or another, it's fairly accepted that you're leaving Eretz Yisrael. If we'll get that line, then we can figure out where if we're below that line, we can. It's Jewish. There are a few Jewish yeshuvim along that road. Contract with them, set up for growing specifically these leafy greens, which is the major headache. Okay. Normally Hilchas Shabbos. Every Shabbos it comes up, and all through the Doiros it was Negeah, it was constantly discussed. Every Talmud Chacham had a corpus of opinion and literature that he wrote on Hilchas Shabbos. Shemitah, we're talking a little bit here, a little bit there, through the Doiros, especially the question of Gvulos Haaretz. We don't have that tradition. I'll give you a simple example. You start to count from Yam HaMelech. Say Yam HaMelech. As we know, Yam HaMelech is sinking. Because the Jordan River was dammed up at the bottom next to Tveria, so it became basically a glorified puddle. It's not a roaring river anymore. And therefore Yam HaMelech is sinking. If it's sinking, it goes back. So where's the Kseh Yam HaMelech? Based on today? Based on 100 years ago? Somebody wrote, what do you mean? I asked an archaeologist. One fellow said it changed, and therefore we have to go more east when we draw our line. The other fellow said, I asked an archaeologist. And he said, a geologist, and he said, it hasn't changed in the last 4,000 years. So the other fellow said, how could you say it hasn't changed in the last 4,000 years? We read in last week's parasha, some of the Rishonim learned that before Hafichas Stoyim, there was no Yam HaMelech. A Rashi, where there's this way, who Yam HaMelech, that it's going to be after Hafichas Stoyim. So if you're asking a geologist, he's going with knowledge which doesn't stem with the Torah. I'm just showing you how the discussion gets really off to all different... No, it was less, just under. Maybe, okay. But I'm just showing you how the discussion moves out of the halacha. And also, we do see today that it is sinking. The whole bottom, right, the level is sinking, Mele the Yam is shrinking. The whole last 10 miles is just like crunchy sort of salt kind of something, or the bottom 10 miles of Yam HaMelech. Okay. Lamaisa. There are several shitas. The simplest shita, and that is basically based on an opinion of the Atmas Kodesh, Tfuas Aris, they lived in Eretz around 100, 150 years ago, is that if we're drawing a line from Yam HaMelech leftwards to the Mediterranean Sea, we have to draw it pretty much straight. Therefore, their opinion is, from when you start heading down, after a short while, you're already in Chutz Laaretz. Fine. Reb Chaim Kanievsky's opinion is... I agree with you. It's not, you know, they did it a little bit based on Arabic place names, and it's not Mavusos based very strongly on Rishonim. But that's their opinion. It's valid. There's a certain logic to it. That below it was the midbar. There's a shtickel, a nachal that goes along there, an ancient wadi. That was their opinion around 150. But I'll give Reb Chaim Kanievsky's opinion is, he says, look, Chazal say that Eretz Yisrael is Nahoreis Saviflo. Nahoreis, rivers surround it. All rivers surround it. He says, look, over here there is no river. But what I'm willing to accept is that the water courses, when it rains, it's what's called a wadi in Arabic, a nahal, means that the water, when it drains away from when it rains, it does that will consider as a river. And therefore, he draws the line be'erech halfway down on the way to Eilat. But it's very arbitrary. It's not, there's not much to draw. That's what he holds. And therefore, bear halfway down, you'll follow the line, and it goes goes to the left. I don't know if this gentleman even brings it over here. The Machmerdicke opinion says we can't really get our handle on it, and therefore let's go the other way around. Let's figure out what's vadai, what's definitely chutz laretz. And there we'll be comfortable with the line. So what does he do? He says the Rambam says that Eretz Yisrael is between the 30th and the 35th parallel. We're talking about latitude. So if we're below the 30th parallel, I'm comfortable that we're safe. That's fair. That's plain conservative. No risk. And that's the opinion. A lot of people follow that opinion. That from 30, you're for sure safe. Because they feel they can't be oimin on it. And therefore they go. There are others who say, look, maybe 30, maybe not. But it's a safek derabanan, so we can make it on safek derabanan. Where's 30 on the map? 30 is 3/4 of the way down. 30 is approximately where it says grofit, if you're following inside. But I didn't want to, it's not a point. Yeah. What's interesting is the following. That the Chazon Ish was asked this about a year before he was Nifta, and he said, I would really want to learn the sugyas of Gvulos Haaretz. And he was Nifta, he never got around to learning it. But he said, look, at that point there was no yishuvim down the entire highway, just one called Yotvasa. So he said, Yotvasa is Yichah B'Seder. That's for sure okay. Yotvasa is under 30. It's not, doesn't show here on the map, but it's there. Oh, it is on this little map. It says Yotvasa. Oh, it's us. My mistake. Yotvasa is for sure B'Seder. That was his opinion. There's another question. So that's where I'm just showing you how this is so vague. There's another question is when we were saying that how far south we go, but the question is, does the line go straight south or does it angle a bit to the left? Okay. Practically speaking, I'll give you what's going on now. What's going on now is the following. There is a moshav called Paran, where a certain, it's not on this map as far as I know, where it's not next to Nachal Paran, it's a bit lower, where a very serious hashgacha allowed one of their suppliers to contract with them to build up greenhouses, and they're growing their lettuce. And it's a very serious hashgacha, very serious. It's above 30, below Rav Chaim Kanievsky's line. It's called Paran. And they're growing over there this leafy bag of greens. And I suspect, going back to what we said at the beginning, that a certain rabbinical organization is giving a hashgacha the sandwiches, but they're saying the lettuce is not under our supervision. I suspect that that's the reason. Because let's think logically. If, how could a rabbinical organization give a hashgacha on a sandwich and say the lettuce is not beseder if the lettuce would let you have a problem of toiloy, of bug infestation? It's not fair. You're a serious rabbinical organization. You can't give a hashgacha and say that the bugs are a problem. What are people do? So I would suspect that this is the issue, that as far as the bugs, they're 100% comfortable. But the source of this lettuce is not l'chol adeis. According to the majority opinions, it's okay. There is an opinion that it's not beseder, and therefore they sort of pick this in-between route, that they're allowing it to be sold under their stamp, but they're writing that we really are not giving soup. That's what I would guess, and Adarab, if any of you come across this and could figure out if I'm right, that's okay. There are others that are taking from higher up, but the Gvul of Medina Yisrael is a little bit to the right of the direct line south. So there are, believe it or not, there's a certain moshav where a different rabbinical organization is taken from some of their fields and not from the others. The ones that are on the right of the heart of the valley, they're comfortable that it's still starts. But this is, I'm just showing you how difficult this is to really get your, I'm sorry? With who?
The Arava.
Right. This is, it's not really a valley, it's the Arava. This entire area, the gentleman is right, it's called the Arava. Oh, so I see. You're aware of this issue. It's called the Arava. This is the question. In Hebrew, you say, Efo ba'arava, where in the Arava are you leaving Eretz Yisrael? At what point? Okay, so this is the question. There are, like I said, there are other Rabbonim who they did something else. And again, Kehillah has a responsibility. Like we said today, you can't not supply this lettuce. People are used to eating it, and they're used to not checking it. You will not be able to educate them back to check. So the Rabbonim understand that they might even have to look a little bit for a kula and other things in order to make sure that there's a steady supply of these leafy greens. That's an acceptable rabbinical decision. So there's a different Hashgach in Eretz Yisrael, that what he did is the following, and we're not going to be able to finish it, but we'll talk about it as much as we can. There's a suffix in Yerushalmi. The Pasuk says, Sadecha lo yisizra. You're not allowed to plant in your field during Shvi'is. What happens if the place where you're planting in is a house? Bayis. It's in the house. You're planting in the house. Is it also usher? Slow. It's two steps. Is it also usher? It's a suffix in Yerushalmi. If you're going to take in your house, take off the flooring and plant in the ground in your house, is it mutter or usher? It's a suffix in Yerushalmi. And the achra is l'chumra. That's a Yerushalmi in Arla. Next question. What happens if you're planting in a field, not in a house, but not directly in the ground, but rather in a planter of some sort? What's called in Hebrew an otzitz. Either nokuv or ein nokuv. Let's say ein nokuv. Ein nokuv means without a hole. You're taking a planter without a hole, and putting it in the field, and you're planting something in it. Is that all right? It doesn't have a hole. Pashtus, it's a suffix in the Gemara Menachos, and it remains, the Pashtus, the Maskonis, is also the Rabbana. Okay?
Hydroponics.
Now, what happens, I'm not going to talk about hydroponics, because it didn't work out, it's not practical. This is a practical issue. The hydroponics is not grown enough to be practical. You know, you have to also be able to make a living. It has to have a price that's sellable. It's not. This is, what I'm talking about is what they're doing. Okay, so close, we've got sidetracked. Okay, so again, we have a suffix in Yerushalmi about if you're planting in the ground in a house, and we have an issur derabbanan to plant in a planter in the field. So now, what happens if you put them both together? In a house, you will plant in a planter. The hachra is that it's mutter.
Plant pot.
A plant pot in a house. Is that mutter?
Without holes.
Yeah, without holes, and that's mutter. That is mutter. So there's a rabbinical organization that feels that he can, even on a commercial level, make large greenhouses, and he's comfortable that the greenhouse is called a house. Now, this is also not l'kuli alma. There are those that hold that a house has to be where the fact that it's in a house makes it more difficult for it to grow, not easier. So that, but there's a major halachic opinions that it's misaver. So he grows these greenhouses, doesn't plant it in the ground, rather covers the ground with PVC, puts a plate, and that's what he did it, and he's selling it in Eretz Yisrael. That's another way to get around, to make it, not to get around, to supply lettuce without toloyim for the frum oilam. And there's a third fellow who tried to actually, I don't know if he was successful or not, to deal actually with an Arab grower, to deal with him, give him all the wherewithal, the technical knowledge that he needs in order to grow it, and that's what's available up to today. Cheshvan Tavshanayne.